Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. I have, of course, got Leslie Ann Jones with me in the studio. Leslie Ann, thank God the bad weather's behind us, brightening up a bit now, and not nearly as inclement as it was a week ago.
Quite right.
So I want to say thanks again to everybody for getting in touch about our last podcast, which was greeted very warmly.
Lovely people. I'm really enjoying the interaction.
And a lot of them agreeing with me that the sooner you can get into the workplace, because we were talking about your daughter becoming a theatre director, then the better it should be. Mm-hmm. I didn't say to you, because you brought me up and reminded me that the gap year comes after leaving school and before going to university.
Yes.
But I think that was the biggest waste of time in the world.
Yeah, I agree. My elder daughter said,
right,
when it was time for her to go to uni,
yeah,
Mummy, can I have a gap year? And I said,
yeah,
you've just had 17 gap years. Get on with it.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Well done. Because by the time you come back from your gap year, you've got a relaxed brain, which you've then got to rev up again into, you know, academic study type mode. But your friends are already up and running. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we didn't discuss was when you said polytechnics, they now, the government, I mean, now need to rebuild colleges for craftsmanship, like plumbing and brickwork and that kind of stuff. And if somebody
vocational
wants to leave school,
studies.
Yes, if somebody
definitely
wants to leave school at 16 and go and become a bricklayer, they should damn well be allowed to do it. Okay?
Quite right.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, we don't often talk about serious subjects, Leslie Ann, but there's a very serious subject which is going to literally divide the nation, and this is HS2, okay?
Okay.
Now, what do you think about HS2?
Well, you know, I don't live in the north, and I can see both sides of the argument. I do think there's something in the side of the argument that says they should have started to build it in the north.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about bringing in the Chinese and Chinese metal and so on to build it. What's that about?
Well, they built a hospital in 8 days because of the coronavirus, right?
Yeah.
A hospital with 1,000 beds in it. They built in 8 days. So the idea is, if we could bring that sort of thinking, mentality and workmanship to this country, might be able to build HS2 in 5 years rather than the 15 years it's going to take the current plan, which is utterly ridiculous, of course.
15 years doesn't benefit the people who need it now.
Exactly. And also, I totally agree with you. When you build, right, it should have been started in the north because we need an east-west rail link
from
Liverpool and Manchester to Leeds, Sheffield and Hull, right? We desperately need that. We need that much more than we do needing a new line from London to Birmingham. But because I'm smarter than the average bear, right, I've done the study of what happened when they rebuilt the north-south, the East Coast line, OK? When they rebuilt that East Coast line, and that goes up to places like Peterborough, you know, and
goes up to Cumbria, doesn't it? To Penrith, I think I've
No,
been
no,
on
that's
that.
The West Coast.
Oh, sorry.
That's the West Coast,
yeah.
East Coast goes all the way to Newcastle.
As I just said, I'm not from
that's
the
right,
north.
That's right, Newcastle and Edinburgh. But
it's a foreign country.
But within 40 miles of London, it goes to Peterborough and then a branch to Cambridge and all that kind of stuff. What they did when they rebuilt that, because the idea was faster links between Edinburgh, Newcastle and London. No. It just sucked people into London. Excuse me, we turned the air conditioning off as
well.
Yeah,
we did.
It just sucked people back into London from places like Norfolk, Suffolk, Cambridshire and Lincolnshire.
Because it's suddenly so accessible.
It's so accessible and it takes an hour and 20 minutes to get in. Mm. Some people don't mind an hour and 20 minutes each way each day for the benefit of living in a house up there which costs 400,000, which would cost a million in London, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I'm all over the place with HS2. I think it should have been cancelled anyway, and I think it should have been started in the north, and I would much have preferred that, certainly. Now, of course, Leslie Ann, you built your career and your life on being a rock chick writer, but some of that will have included a lot of television in those days, won't it? You know what I mean? Television shows and people who got into it. So I'm delighted to be able to tell you that I've discovered this review of the 20 classic programmes of all time. Were they as good as we thought they were, and I want you to give me a response to each one very quickly, please, OK?
OK.
Now, do you remember Dixon of Dock Green?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. I was very small.
I was.
But I can remember the lamppost. It was black and white, wasn't it? Yeah, I do remember it.
And Jack Warner, you know.
Jack Warner.
I remember that as a kid. You absolutely. I was about six, I think, when I was watching that. And I look back and think how safe I felt in front of the fire on a Saturday night with Mum and Dad watching Dixon of Dock Green.
And
what a nice man he was.
Beat bobbies. We still had beat bobbies in those days. And he was representative of that, wasn't he?
He very much was. You're absolutely right. So, upstairs, downstairs?
I didn't really bother with that. No,
I didn't either.
But I remember it.
I don't know either. It was, you know, it was a kind of old simile of Downton Abbey. But
actually, the other way around, isn't it? Downton Abbey sort of ripped that off, that idea.
Yeah, I suppose he did. Yeah.
But wasn't Pauline Collins and John Alderton?
Yes, they made their debuts in that.
And they were a real life couple.
Yes, that's right.
She was very cute in that, very bubbly.
She went on to be in the Scarecrow thing, didn't she?
And she was Shirley Valentine.
Shirley Valentine, she was, that's right. She got a bit older, you're absolutely right.
Chips and Egg.
Yeah, hey?
Chips and Egg.
Chips and Egg, that's right, yeah. Right, what about the Avengers?
Yeah, love the Avengers. Now, My dad was in the Avengers.
What?
My dad was once in the Avengers.
Really? Why? Yeah. How come?
This was a thing, because I went to a college in New York for a while when I was 16.
Yes.
On a school exchange program.
Very nice.
And I was living with a family on Long Island.
Yeah.
And this episode of the Avengers came on, because they watched it in America.
Right.
At this time. And I said, oh, that's funny, you know, because my dad did an episode of the Avengers once.
Yeah.
And just as I said that, on came my dad.
Yes.
So he was heading a ball, sort of, you know, bouncing a ball.
In America, you mentioned that your dad was in one episode of the Avengers.
And it came on. It was so bizarre.
And what was the plot?
So he was just heading, you know, they do that thing where they toss the ball up and they sort of keep heading
it. Yeah, and then put it on the shoulder and
all
of that.
And he was very good at that stuff. He used to catch it on his back and things. And then he got shot. And
so
it was obviously a murder investigation.
Right. Yeah.
But I remember my sister watching this and being hysterical because she thought Dad had really been shot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, reality
it was
TV.
Good, though. I loved Emma Peel and John Steed.
Yes, that's right.
They were my Avengers.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So when it was John Steed and Emma Peel, and that was Diana Rigg and what was
Patrick McNee.
Patrick McNee and Emma Rigg. And she was so stylish.
Stunning.
She had a Lotus Elan sports car.
Yeah.
She dressed in like white trouser suits,
leather.
And she was like the style icon of the '60s, wasn't
great
she?
Great actress
and
good stage actress as well.
Good stage actress. Yeah. Oh, she became Dame, I think, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then unfortunately, she left and went into something else, and it was never the same again.
No,
because it
was Linda Thorson.
Linda Thorson. Yeah, right. Okay, so we got those. Right, what about the goodies?
No, I never did like the goodies.
I thought it was rubbish. I didn't even think it was funny.
No.
I didn't think it was funny. I didn't know what it was. It was the three Cambridge graduates, you know, just being silly, really.
Goody, goody, gum, gum.
Oh, was that it? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
and riding
like
around
that.
on a tri bike. What's it called? A tandem, three seater tandem.
Can you ride tandem? Mm,
something like that.
No, not my cup of tea at all.
Right. What about porridge?
Richard Beckinsale, I like.
I loved porridge.
Yeah,
I love porridge.
Although sort of making a sitcom out of prisoners
but
is
Ronnie
a little
Barker
bit suspect.
Was such a gifted actor in my view. You know, such a sterling sort of representative of character people. You know what I mean?
And great comic timing.
Yes, great comic timing,
which is really non-existent nowadays.
No, it's absolutely. But I loved that. And Beckinsale died very young, didn't he?
30. He was 30 years old.
30.
Yeah.
What did he die of? Heart attack?
I think he just dropped
just
down
died.
The head.
Just died.
Awful.
And his daughter is Kate Beckinsale.
She is, yeah.
Yeah. And how old is she now?
She must be in her 40s now.
Golly, that's so amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So anyway, great, okay. It Ain't Half Hot Mum. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. They were in the jungle, weren't they?
Yeah, it was that Windsor Davis guy, you know.
But Whispering Grass. They had that single, didn't they?
They had
a massive hit.
Yeah,
with
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Why Do You Whisper Green Grass, yeah, or something like that, yeah.
I remember them on Top of the Pops. I thought it's
really
sunk very low here now, isn't it?
Yeah, because there was a guy called Shorty sang, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Against
he
the tall guy,
syndrome.
Winter Davis. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Steptoe and Son.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit too coarse.
I didn't like it. It was vulgar.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I think my mum didn't let us watch it.
No, I don't blame you.
And there were a lot of sort of dirty, you dirty old man.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
And the jokes were a little bit, you know, not quite nice.
I was just uncomfortable about the surroundings. They were a couple of scrap merchant dealers who went around with a...
Rag and bone men
who went around with a horse and cart collecting, and all the junk was piled up in their yard. And it made me feel very uncomfortable.
And there was always a toilet. You sort of almost felt that you wanted to go and have a wash after
Yes, I agree. And they wore grubby clothes with holes in them and all that.
And he was a creepy old man, wasn't he? There were always kind of nasty comments about young girls and things.
Yes, that's right. There were, yeah.
That wouldn't work today.
No, it wouldn't work today. A lot of these wouldn't work today. It ain't half hot, Mum. Windsor Davis, who was the sergeant major, used to refer to the boys in the theatre group as puffs and you know, and pansies.
Could not say that nowadays.
And all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely
quite
right
as well.
Now, one of these in this survey that is voted joint number one, the Sweeney, right?
Yeah, love the Sweeney.
I love the Sweeney. I still do.
Love John Thor.
I still watch it all the time.
I always used to think he was my dad, actually.
Really?
They look very similar.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. But what happened there was, by the way, I know this from having studied the Sweeney in the past, is that it was the first show that went out of the studio. So, you know, before that he's had Zed cars and, you know, I'm talking about cop shows now and that kind of stuff and Softly and all that kind of stuff. This was the first one where they started bolting cameras onto the front of cars and taking them out on the roads.
You know, filming in the field.
That's right, yeah. And it brought a whole new direction to it. Plus the fact, I think, that the two actors, John Thor, you've already mentioned, but Dennis Waterman was utterly brilliant in my view.
Except he always played that part. He only ever played himself.
I agree.
There was no other variation on Dennis Waterman.
Do you mean in future programmes that he did?
Whatever he acted in.
Yes.
It's a bit like Sean Connery, who, you know, even when he was a Russian general
in Hunt for Red October
or something, he was still a Scottish James Bond.
Yeah. No, I think you may be right. But terrific programme. It lasts to this day. I still watch it. Part of the reason I watch these, and I've said this before, is not just because I thought they were great quality television, but I still like to see, like in The Saint, a bloke driving up Oxford Street, parking his car, getting out, not locking his door, and going into Debenhams to buy something.
Those were the days.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's no parking meters, no yellow lines, nothing. Yeah.
No
amazing.
No wardens.
Can you imagine?
Behind phone boxes.
Yeah. Now,
phone boxes we even had.
Exactly. Now, what about Poldark? And I don't mean Poldark that we've just recently been watching. I mean Poldark going back to 75, which I don't even remember.
No, I don't.
With, who was in it?
We don't know, because we don't remember it.
The captain was a guy called Robin Ulls. No, don't even remember it. Right. Tales of the Unexpected.
Oh, they had that
Roald
funny...
Dahl.
Yeah, so there was that woman, sort of naked woman dancing on the front. Yeah.
I quite liked
it. They were good stories. Joan Collins was in a few of those.
Funny enough, she was. You're absolutely right.
And she was fantastic.
I thought they were intriguing because of the twist at the end always, you know? Yeah. I remember
Roald Dahl, genius writer.
Oh, genius writer. I totally agree. And the plots were sort of quite complicated, but always worked out at the end. I remember one in which this guy, right... And it's very typical of the workplace, you know, throughout the world. Comes in on his last day, and he's done 40 years there, and he goes up to the boardroom, and they give him like a crummy little watch, you know, crummy little clock, you know. And then he says, "Perhaps you'd all like to join me for a drink after work?" And they'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't tonight. You know, didn't you know tonight is the, you know, the Lord Mayor's banquet, you know, or something like that, and we've been asked to host it." And "Oh, really?" So he goes round the his workplace, the factory, you know, "Would you like to come for a drink with me tonight?" And last, no, sorry, Lord Mayor's banquet and all that kind of stuff, you know. And the Lord Mayor's banquet is being held in their dining hall at this particular place. So this guy goes and gets pissed on his own and then comes back and then sets fire to their banqueting hall because he, you know, only to find afterwards that actually it was his leaving due. And they were all going to spring out of the cupboards, but half of them burnt to death. You know?
Oh, my God, what a story.
Yeah,
terrible.
Exactly.
Oh, what a bitter old man.
A bitter old man. But he didn't know. He thought he'd been turned over, and so he set fire to the place.
That's awful.
Do you remember, because I remember reading about it all the time, but I never got around to watching, The Singing Detective.
That was Joanne Whalley, wasn't it?
No, it was Michael Gambon.
No, I don't mean the part. Oh. Obviously, the same guy didn't play the woman's part. But yes. I think Joanne Whalley as a nurse.
Oh, really?
I think it was.
Let me have a look here. Dennis Potter was the writer.
Because it was sort of musical television.
Philip Marlowe.
Musical drama.
Musical drama. Hospital bed, unable to move, his hands clenched in order, feeling understandably sorry for himself, feverish mind, singing detective starts to mingle with painful childhood memories. Doesn't say who the nurse was. Anyway, I don't...
he had eczema.
He had eczema and stayed in bed
all the
time.
It was Joanne Whalley, and she married Val Kilmer. And they had a very unhappy marriage. She became Joanne Whalley Kilmer.
Oh, really?
And her acting career fell off the side.
Really? Why?
I don't know. And she was a wonderful little actress.
Oh, did you rate Val Kilmer?
Early on, but he went off very quickly, didn't he?
But what about Top Gun? He was in Top Gun, wasn't he?
No.
He was Iceman. Yeah, he was Iceman in Val Kilmer. That's right, he was.
Was he? Okay.
And wasn't he a Batman as well?
Wasn't he a Robin Hood?
I don't think he was a Robin Hood. I think he was a Batman.
Oh, I don't know. They all kind of blend into one, don't they, really?
Yeah, they over time. No, they do.
The young, good-looking actors who sort of go off and get puffy and they lose their... They have no neck. There comes a time when they don't have a neck anymore.
Yeah,
have you noticed?
Yeah, no, well, I don't know.
Can't go for no necks.
But, you know, the new television
no
box
necks
I've
need
got
not apply.
Now, I've got about 500 channels and you can find anything. And I always search for Columbo. And
love Columbo.
Do you?
Love Columbo.
Yeah.
That's the journalistic technique which we all were brought up on.
Absolutely.
Get to the door, having done the interview, and look back, pause, just one more thing.
That's
and
right.
That's where you get your headline.
Yeah. And do you know what? I did love Columbo. I just like the start of Columbo sometimes, the first 15 minutes, to see
because
the murder being committed.
Done it.
Yeah. Because it was a totally different concept.
Yeah.
Instead of a whodunit that takes you right to the end, it was a...
It was a he done it.
Yeah. And
love
it. She's done it.
Yeah.
Now, how is Columbo going to prove it?
Yeah.
Brilliant
concept.
Show. And do you know what? You know the guy who played, Only Fools and Horses?
David Jason.
He invented another copper called Frost. Right? And he stole the idea, didn't he? Remember?
Yeah, I did. And now you say that.
As he walked to the edge of the room after, just one more thing, sir.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, he also, so, I mean, when he said stole it, I mean, I don't mean he plagiarised it. It was an artistic adaptation. But he also did that, you know, with another series in which he tried to imitate Johnny English. You know, Johnny English was the films made by, you know, rubber-nosed comedian.
Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, Rowan Atkinson. Yeah. David Jason tried to replicate that in a thing called The Queen's Bodyguard, right, or The Royal Bodyguard. You know, some blundering... and it only lasted one series and it disappeared.
Don't remember it at all.
Because comedians often do imitate each other. Right, OK, folks, you're listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you for joining us today. Leslie Ann, as always, you're here. Now, Leslie Ann, obviously, you've done a lot of rock stuff in your time, OK?
Indeed.
So, and, you know, you've done concerts and you've done them in America, around the world. You've travelled with bands and groups. What do you think about this, what I think is almost a sinister and horrible idea of a new Whitney Houston tour with a band with... professional singers singing along, everything except in the middle is a hologram of Whitney Houston. I mean,
it's not the first time.
They did it with Frank Sinatra. No, this is a whole tour. This is a whole tour.
Oh, a whole tour as opposed to a one-off.
This is not just one-off. They've decided they're going to take the whole, you know, shebang.
Well, it's not the first time that the hologram
revival has been done. Creepy.
Apparently, I've not personally seen one in the flesh, as it were.
Yeah.
But they did it with Frank Sinatra. They did it with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
They also did, going way, way back.
Yes.
Freddie Mercury was in this. It was a musical called Time.
Oh, yeah.
At the Dominion Theatre, Tottenham Court Road.
Did it have anything to do
and
with...
Laurence Olivier was the hologram.
Oh, right,
it was the first time they really used this technology.
Oh, really?
And it was quite impressive. But
yeah.
A whole tour, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, really, I want to go see that.
No, okay. The... Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a minute. The hologram, I don't quite get it. Have you seen one of these hologram shows?
Yes.
And you know when they talk about putting a hologram on the side of a building? So, let's all celebrate Brexit.
That's more of a projection.
That's what I mean.
A hologram is...
So does the hologram look like a human being?
Yeah, it's three-dimensional.
Right.
And it is projected, but it's a 3D projection. It's not just a picture.
Right.
It's a moving, singing, dancing... entity.
Right.
And, yeah.
Okay.
I saw one at like a brief thing that was done years ago, a prototype thing, of Keith Moon from The Who, and it was very convincing.
Well, in that case, I'm rather interested to know why, if you can put Whitney Houston on stage and make a hologram of her...
You don't need to take it on tour, because you can do lots of holograms simultaneously, and they can be everywhere, all over the world at once.
You're going to have the same backing singers and the same band and all that kind of stuff. But what I was going to say is, when will the day come when we can project the holograms of footballers onto a three-dimensional pitch and watch George Best playing again? Surely that's got to be able to come.
Yes, but, so you can't interact with the other players because you're a hologram, so your movements are predestined.
Mm-hmm.
It's already all mapped out. So you can't have live interaction with other live players.
Oh, I see.
It could only be a film, couldn't it?
Well, I suppose so. I suppose you're right. Now, talking about footballers, right, this is something that will be very close to your heart.
Yes.
There is a campaign going on at the moment by a national newspaper known as the Daily Mail, which, of course, you have written many millions of words. And they are trying to get Jimmy Greaves some sort of gong. Now, I think I'm right in saying
knighted.
That your uncle played with Jimmy Greaves,
they did.
Didn't he?
Cliff, Uncle Cliff Jones, they played together.
The Welsh wizard.
So Cliff was in the team that did the double. And I think
61, 62?
Yes, exactly.
No, 60, 61?
May have been. I wasn't around in those days. Yeah. But
well, hang on. 63, the FA Cup was won by Spurs. 61, 62, they won the double.
There you are. Yeah. And Greavesy came into the team after that.
Right. Yeah, that's right, he did, because he played for Chelsea.
Yeah.
He went out to Italy, to AC Milan. He didn't like the heat and all that, came back. Right. Yeah.
They were very close. And Cliff...
Who, your uncle and Greavesy?
And my father.
Right.
Because my father and Cliff were raised... They were, in fact, first cousins, but they were brought up as brothers.
Right.
They shared a bed for the first 11 years of their life.
Yeah.
So they were very, very close as brothers.
Right.
And Greavesy was often in our house. My parents were very social people when they were young.
Yes.
So we had endless parties.
Do you remember him being there?
Oh, yeah, lots.
Oh, you remember Jimmy Greaves,
do
you? He
was part of the family, yeah.
Really? That's terrific.
So he and Cliff both sadly became alcoholics after their playing days were over.
Well, they were alcoholics during their playing days, weren't
they?
Well,
yeah, pretty
because
much. But
I talk to people, you know, I've got friends at Spurs who've now got a box at the new ground, but, you know, they go back decades to White Hart Lane. And the team used to train near White Hart Lane or even on the other pitch at White Hart Lane.
Chesant, they had a training ground.
Went
up there a few times, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But they went in the very old days when they would train up at White Hart Lane because they'd had a game the night before or something like that, you know. As soon as training was over, the local pub nearby, I don't know what it's called, but it's a traditional pub on Tottenham High Road, you know. And they'd been there all afternoon in a lock-in.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I presume that your uncle was in there and maybe your dad would nip in occasionally, you know?
My dad did his share, you know. They drank in those days. I don't think we had the drink driving rules that we have today. And they
the drink driving rules came in about the mid-60s.
Okay.
Before that,
My father used to drive home pissed most nights.
Yeah, well...
My mother was always having a go at him about it, but he never got done.
No.
Never once got pulled over.
No.
But Cliff has often said that Greavesy saved his life.
In what respect?
With his drinking.
Really?
Got him into Alcoholics Anonymous. And
you see, the amazing thing about Jimmy Greaves is that he was a chronic alcoholic.
Yeah.
And so chronic, because I've read his book, you know, when I was a kid, because he still is a legend.
Massive idol, wasn't he?
It's not good to bring Jimmy Greaves out in public anymore, because he's very unwell.
He's kind of gone.
He's kind of gone.
So it makes me feel... I was talking to Mum about it yesterday, actually,
because
it came up, and I said, what do you think about this move to get Jimmy Greaves a gong? And she said, well, it's not about him. It's not for him. He won't know much about it.
Yes.
She said, it's all for the family.
Yes.
And I tend to agree with that.
Yes.
You know, who is it going to benefit?
Yeah.
Who is going to get the glory? It's all going to be reflected.
It's difficult because Jimmy Greaves, in my view, tragically, didn't play in the World Cup final in 66.
Not his fault.
He was dropped at the last moment.
Yeah, he was injured, wasn't he?
Well, he was injured for the semi-final, and therefore Martin Peters and Jeff Hurst sort of led the line, and Alf Ramsey decided to stick with it. Although many, many people wanted Roger Hunt taken out of the team, who they described as a bit of a cart horse compared to the silky skills of Jimmy Greaves, but Sir Alf wouldn't have it. He said no, and I remember to this day, the picture of the team coach arriving at Wembley, one of those very old sort of, you know, round top coaches, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And Jimmy Greaves staring out the window with a blank look on his face, knowing he wasn't going to be plane.
So near yet so far.
Because there were no subs in those days, no, so once you didn't start, you couldn't get on.
It's
only
a tragedy because we haven't got anywhere near ever since.
No.
So that is our zenith in terms of international football.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if we'd have had other success in the World Cup down the years, we wouldn't reflect on that quite so much as we do.
And also, he had he had an amazing track record. He scored 44 goals, but he only played about 65 times for England.
He scored, three hat-tricks in one season or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Incredible.
Wayne Rooney, who's now got about 52, 53 goals in 120 appearances. Jimmy Greaves would only have to play for England another 10 times to have overtaken that. You know what I mean? But getting back to the alcoholism, it was chronic with Jimmy Greaves. He used to bury bottles of vodka in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he'd say to his wife that he was going out to tend the roses at the bottom of the garden or something, and the little shed, you know, and he'd have
a Iris
bottle of vodka.
Or Irene, something like
something
that.
Something like that, yeah.
I remember her
picture
vaguely
in the paper this week.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, the...
They'll go to any lengths to conceal the evidence.
Well, you're absolutely right. And then one day, he just suddenly decided to stop.
Mm.
And I think it was 50 years now since he's had a drink, or 47 years.
Yeah, the damage is done, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's a shadow of his former self.
Yeah, but he looked very healthy in the in-between years. When he did Saint and Greavesy on the TV.
That was great, wasn't it?
With Ian St John. It was brilliant.
I used to love that.
It was brilliant. And when he used to do, like, road shows, he'd go out on stage and all that kind of stuff. He was very lucid. And I think he's more a victim of some form of dementia, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something.
Which begs all the questions, where do these diseases come from?
Well,
surely you're not doing yourself any favours by drinking yourself stupid, because ultimately that is going to take a toll on the brain.
Yeah, sure. I would be terrified to be an alcoholic because I would miss not having drink on a daily basis. I don't mean loads of it from dawn till dusk. I mean the ability after work to go and have a couple of pints of beer.
I absolutely agree with you. We were all at a family party recently.
Yeah.
My cousin's 60th, actually. Mm. Mm. And Cliff and Joan were there. So Uncle Cliff Jones and his wife.
Yeah.
And so Joan is there with a glass of white wine. And he's there with his fizzy water with a bit of cucumber in it.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, Uncle Cliff, don't you miss having a drink? And he said, no, I don't. He said, I'm used to it. Doesn't it bother you that Auntie Joan stands there with a glass of wine? No, he said, I'm used to it.
Yeah.
But they still go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings.
Yeah.
And the whole family goes. All their kids go with them and everything.
Really?
So they all support him very much.
That's interesting, because the other legendary alcoholic in football terms is Tony Adams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you only got to read Tony Adams' book, Addicted, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony Adams was a disgraceful, he admits it to himself, a disgusting drunk. He would sometimes come home from the pub at 3 a.m, and the next morning he'd get up a few hours later, put his trousers back on to find that he'd wet himself, but he was so into needing drink, he'd just go out in them, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, absolutely horrible stuff.
It's a sorry state of affairs to get into.
And yet gave it up. But the point is, I've worked with alcoholics, right?
Yeah.
And you can see the stress and the strain on their face all day long. Because at the end of the day, the lads are all going to the pub. They don't go because you can't stand in a pub and not drink. I mean, it's too much torture, you know what I mean? Too much temptation.
I absolutely agree with you. There's something really wonderful about going out and getting a bit drunk. I don't mean tipsy.
Having a few drinks.
Like, but isn't it nice? We sometimes do it after we do a studio session.
Yeah, sure.
Go down the road, have a couple of gins and tonics, and you can start to feel yourself getting a little bit merry. That is a nice feeling.
Yes.
And I would really miss that if I could never have another drink because I couldn't drink anymore.
So would I. And in fact, I wouldn't bother now. At my age now,
no.
I'd say, right, that's it, 5 years, bang, I'll be off anyway. So, and I simply wouldn't bother. I've never felt I was an alcoholic, but as I say, the comfort of a drink after a long, hard day. We used to work some very late nights, as I'm sure you did, and there was nothing better than getting into one of those clubs around Fleet Street at 10:30 at night, you know, and you just come back from a job or something like that and get stuck in until 2 a.m, you know what I mean?
We drank every day in those days.
Of course we did.
But we were young.
Every day, all day.
You don't drink every day now, do you?
Most days I will have a drink. Most days I'll have a drink because, like today, after this, and, you know, I've got to go now and see somebody else, got to talk about a football documentary, and I'll probably have a drink with him while I'm talking about that. And then I'll get the train down to Surrey and I get off, you know, it's idyllic, really. I get off my train at the other end. And there's a pub
straight
next door.
In the pub.
And I'll have a couple of pints and, you know, read back over the work I've done today and the Evening Standard paper and all that. And then I'll go home and I will have some dinner and I will have probably a glass of red wine with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't drink bottles of wine like I used to. We used to drink bottles at home.
Yeah, we did. Our intake was very high.
Yes, it was very high.
So I live by myself during term time because kids are away at uni.
Yes.
I would never dream of having a drink on my own because I feel that's a very slippery slope.
Yeah, I drink on my own because I live on my own.
But you're a man. And
yes, I am.
I'm
wondering
if there's a difference between men and women doing it.
My sister is enthusiastic social drinker.
Okay.
And she will get through a couple of glasses while dinner's being prepared in the kitchen because they've got one of those lovely kitchens where there's a block in the middle, you know what I mean? And
not open plan?
Not open plan, no, very much. It's so big, it's the size of my lounge, you know what I mean? No, it's not. It's twice the size of my lounge. And she'll have a couple of glasses while she's making the dinner.
It's quite a civilised thing to do. But if you're feeding other people, so you're not spending the evening on your own, I always thought it's a very slippery slope for me because there's no yardstick in the shape of another person telling me when I've had enough.
You could well be right. I've always felt very sorry for women in the workplace who didn't have a friend to leave with in the evening because there were always more men around in Fleet Street than women to go and have a drink with. And a woman would never, ever go into a pub on her own
in those days. I probably wouldn't do it now.
Not many women will.
Although I do go into my private members' clubs
alone, and
I'm very happy to stand at the bar and have a drink on my own.
I saw a woman the other day. I was in a pub down in Surrey somewhere, and I always sit around the back, you know, not because I'm unsociable, but I like to read things when I'm in a pub, you know, like, you know, magazine or paper or something. And there was a woman there, and she had a pint of cider, and she'd ordered her food, and she was reading her book. And she ate her food, drank her cider, finished her book and left. And I thought, good for you.
Yeah.
Because why should you be exempted from that, you know, hour of, you know, detached time, downtime, comfort time, just because you're a woman? I wish more women would do it.
I agree. But the thing I hate about hotels, for example,
going
down to breakfast in the morning, say I'm working in Glasgow or somewhere, and come down to breakfast, you go up to the little podium and the lady goes to you, just the one.
Yeah.
And I get cross about that. And I say, never say just the one. Yeah. I'm still an individual in my own right.
Yeah.
I'm still a person. I still need to eat.
Yeah, but they say that to me.
Just the one. It's offensive.
I stayed in hundreds of hotels on my own. And when I come down, they don't say just the one to me. I just say room number 272.
You're a man, you see. So there again, it's different. But what, I'm not allowed to go to breakfast because I'm one person?
I agree. The breakfast thing I've always disliked. The tables are too close to each other.
Yeah, they
and
are.
People are unsociable
you
because
hear
they're
other people
rushing
eating
around.
Their cornflakes.
Yeah, I agree.
No, thanks.
Anyway, there you go. Right, OK, folks, that was another Planet Porky with myself and Leslie-Ann Jones. Thank you very much for tuning in. Leslie-Ann, where can people get hold of you?
On Twitter, at LAJWriter.
That's very good. Do you have a Facebook or something as well?
I've got a Facebook account.
What's the picture one that you do? Do you do pictures as well?
I don't do Instagram.
No, I don't do Instagram.
I haven't got into that.
No. I don't. Look at my face. Why would I want an Instagram picture?
Beautiful face,
account?
Darling. I look at it all day, every day.
It's very kind of you. And, folks, I'm Mike Parry at MikeParry8, and it's planetporkypod@gmail.com. Thanks very much for listening. With you again very soon. I've never felt I was an alcoholic, but as I say, the comfort of a drink after a long, hard day. We used to work some very late nights, as I'm sure you did, and there was nothing better than getting into one of those clubs around Fleet Street at 10:30 at night, you know, and you just come back from a job or something like that and get stuck in till 2 in the morning, you know
but
what
we
I mean?
We drank every day in those days.
Of course we did.
But we were young.
Every day, all day.
You don't
drink
every day now, do you?
Most days I'll have a drink. I'll have a drink because, like today, after this, and, you know, I've got to go now and see somebody else, got to talk about a football documentary, and I'll probably have a drink with him while I'm talking about that. And then I'll get the train down to Surrey and I get off. You know, it's idyllic, really. I get off my train at the other end, and there's a pub
straight
next door.
In the pub.
And I'll have a couple of pints and, you know, read back over the work I've done today and the Evening Standard paper and all that. And then I'll go home and I will have some dinner and I will have probably a glass of red wine with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't drink bottles of wine like I used to. We used to drink bottles at home.
Yeah, we did. Our intake was very high.
Yes, it was. Do you have a Facebook or something as well?
I've got a Facebook account.
What's the picture one that you do? Do you do pictures as well?
I don't do Instagram.
No, I don't do Instagram.
I haven't got into that.
No. I don't. Look at my face. Why would I want an Instagram picture?
Beautiful face,
account?
Darling. I look at it all day, every day.
It's very kind of you. Do you remember, because I remember reading about it all the time, but I never got around to watching The Singing Detective.
That was Joanne Whalley, wasn't it?
No, it was Michael Gambon.